Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
It's Hurricane Hotline on the home of the U. AM 560 and FM 96.5 HD2 WQAM. Driven by Williamson Cadillac. For value, style, and performance, visit Miami's premier luxury dealership. Click WilliamsonCadillac.com now. Here's Don Bailey Jr. and the voice of the Hurricanes, Joe Zagacki.
Big night tonight. College football rankings will be released tonight. University of Miami is inside the top 10. We'll see what the college football playoff committee thinks about the University of Miami sitting at 7-1 in a holding pattern at number 10 in the country. We'll see who the top four are. So that will be coming up on the show. Brett McMurphy will join us. Brett, a college football writer from Stadium College Football Insider, joins us at about 6:20. We'll talk about the University of Miami offensive line with offensive line coach Garen Justice. Basketball season gets underway around the country tomorrow, and for the University of Miami women's basketball team as well. The men begin on Sunday. Jim Larrañaga joins us at 7. Katie Meyer is with us at 7:25. And then Don and I will wrap things up with a look at the college football rankings. We'll break that down as the rankings will be released right around 7 o'clock. So it'll be fun. The University of Miami is going to be in the conversation somewhere.
They will, Joe. And, you know, unfortunately, Miami isn't on pace. We had to take the pause, but I certainly would feel confident where they would be right now that they would still only have one loss going into this week's game and going into the first week of games after the announcement is made. So, you know, at this time of year, there's always a ton of speculation, but at the same time, you just got to keep winning, right? I mean, that's really what it boils down to.
It's crazy. We are at Thanksgiving, which generally is the end of the year. Miami still has three games left. The Big Ten, like, they just started. Ohio State's 4-0. The Pac-12, Utah played their first game of the year the other day.
Right.
So the top four right now are Alabama, Notre Dame, Ohio State, and Clemson in the AP poll. Texas A&M just on the outside. McMurphy's going to be with us. He's projecting the University of Miami to go to the Peach Bowl and play Cincinnati. So some have Miami projected to go to the Orange Bowl to play Florida. Florida's number 6 right now in the AP top 25.
I'll take either one, wouldn't you? I'm all about staying at home, and I'm all about the Orange Bowl. And if you're looking for trying to keep things geographically safe, then, you know, Florida and Miami doing that deal would certainly make the most sense. But Atlanta's nothing but a hot skip and a jump away, and we hadn't been to the Peach Bowl in a long time. And I got to watch a lot of that Cincinnati UCF game over the weekend, and Cincinnati's one heck of a football team, and so is UCF. UCF gave them a handful as well.
So the question for the University of Miami is right now, 2 days before Thanksgiving, where are we? We're 7-1, and the season has stopped. They were developing an identity, right? The receivers were starting to come along, making some plays on defense, getting just enough multiple stops defensively, winning in the fourth quarter. So you could see an identity starting to form. And then we're on pause. So how hard is it going to be to pick things up?
You know, in my opinion, Joe, it's going to be difficult. I've been around this thing forever, and the thing that I appreciate most about college football is the repetition. You know, you do the same thing on Monday and Tuesday and every day in the week, and you go through the same preparation for a game and the day after, and everything is the same. And there's comfort in that, and you also have a baseline for getting better. And Miami being on the pause, we don't really know what has happened this past week. And now you're into week two of the pause, and you wonder how much more were they able to get done. And you were really peaking. You had won some physical football games. You had come from behind. You had dominated the fourth quarter. And what that fourth quarter had shown me is that Miami's reputation was that they were a fourth quarter team. That's built, the foundation that is built in the strength and conditioning room. So if Miami's been able to condition and lift and run, then some things will come of it. But you still have to practice the game. And a two-week off period when you're on a roll, when you've won four games in a row and you're not and you're feeling comfortable about yourself, I don't think it's a positive. It's a positive that it's there. It's a positive because of COVID, and it's a positive that you still have football to play. But for saying you're going to play your best football after 2 weeks off in the first week of December, I don't think that that's something that anybody has ever even had to deal with before.
Well, maybe not this late in the season. Now, other teams have had to. Notre Dame went through it earlier in the year.
Sure. Yep.
And Florida went through it. Notre Dame, by the way, Miami's path could be decided on Friday. Notre Dame and Carolina play Friday afternoon at North Carolina. Notre Dame goes into that game a 7-point favorite. Notre Dame's advantage in the game, you would think, is in the trenches.
Yes.
Carolina's had a tough time stopping people, but the Irish are without their center and guard. And I don't know if that's going to make a difference or not, but the foundation for Notre Dame football is in the trenches.
You know, it will make a difference. So I'll answer that question right now. But I will tell you, when I saw the Notre Dame-Clemson game, I was very impressed with Notre Dame's quickness. They looked faster. They looked quicker. They looked excellent as far as their angles and speed goes on defense. But I will also tell you, I was looking at some numbers, and North Carolina, you know, their back is leading the ACC. And, I mean, he's way ahead of ETN. And you look at what is going on with their statistics offensively, this offense that North Carolina is running is unbelievable. They've had great success with it. And the Wake Forest game, the numbers aren't even believable. It was like 750 yards of offense and 112 points between the two teams. And, you know, I looked at this and I thought it was typographical errors, you know, in the box scores. So, you know, Notre Dame's going to have their hands full. But I when you look at North Carolina, they've been a little bit unpredictable. You know, I guess they lost to Florida State. They lost to Virginia. How could a team that can put up that many yards and that many points and play that kind of football? And, you know, but then you go look at Wake Forest and, heck, they've got more turnovers than anybody almost in the country, and more takeaways, and they're doing darn good as well. So I don't know. It's going to be one heck of a ball game.
Now Wake Forest, our listeners might not believe this, and I guess I'll have to go check the stats again. But they take the ball away, as you mentioned. What they do not do is give the ball away. Going
zero
into
or one.
They have one turnover
yeah.
the entire year. One turnover. The right. quarterback has not thrown an interception yet, Hartman.
No, he hasn't. and so, like, they're like plus 15 in this category. I mean, it's an unheard of number. It's not, you know, it's not the total, but they are not giving the football away at all. And they've got a guy that, when I saw him play, that looks like he's an All-American, a defensive end. They're very, very, very well coached, and they have snuck up on each other, on everybody that they've played. But I think it's just because of there's no name recognition, or people put Wake Forest with basketball or what. I don't know what it is, but I'm telling you this, You go there and play a football game, you're lucky to get out alive.
Well, Wake Forest has had to juggle their schedule around a little bit. They were scheduled to play this week. They're not playing. So, let's see. They get back into action against Miami on December the 5th.
Right.
Right? Because their game against Louisville, I believe, this week was moved. ACC's had a jigsaw puzzle the last couple of weeks. But Miami's going to be back in action December the 5th. One of the areas where I think it might hurt Miami, where they were gaining momentum, was at their wide receiver position. You look at the last four games, and those numbers increase in every single game.
Well, I'll go back to the point of repetition, and that is, I felt early on what I was told by the coaching staff and what I had seen with my own eyes, that November, you know, mid-October, November, if Miami was going to make a jump, that would be the time that they would do it. And lo and behold, that's exactly what happened, because you had a new quarterback with a new system at a new team that hadn't played catch with any of these guys. And I think it just all started coming together. I think a big part of it was is that, you know, Mike Harley and those guys decided that we better work a little more after practice. We better try and build a better relationship with De'Eriq King. We better make sure that we're putting in a few extra hours a week. And that's always pays off. So you look at, and it just happened at the right time. You know, you see that the teams were able to stack the box against Miami in the running game because they had no threat of the pass game. And we had Brevin Jordan, who was out for 3 weeks. And all those things combined, it was mandatory that Miami got the run game in place. And, I mean, the pass game in place, and thank God they did.
De'Eriq King is passing average per game is number 5 now in the ACC, 260 yards a game. That's 5th in the ACC. You know, like 15 years ago, that'd be number 1. But Sam Howell was throwing for 328 yards a game.
Well, when you look at Sam Howell, his numbers really were pretty darn close to this last year. I think that when you start looking at how this guy plays the game, and they hold up in protection. Stacy Searles, Miami's old offensive line coach, is up there, and they've held up in protection. They've got receivers that were experienced from last year with him. They had a running game that was with him last year, and he was able to grow with Mac Brown in his first year with this offense last year with their first year coordinator. And now you're seeing the benefits of all these guys being together.
De'Eriq King, by the way, is number 3 in the ACC in total offense. He's giving Miami 313 yards a game of total offense.
You know, Joe, the thing that I like about De'Eriq King is that, and I think people are starting to adapt to it, is the fact that he's a part of Miami's running game. You talk about, well, the running game's not. A couple of weeks ago, I guess we almost had 190 yards in rushing. I guess it was NC State or Pitt or whoever it was. And, well, the running game's not – well, no, you had almost 200 yards rushing. So I like the element that De'Eriq King brings with that. But I still think now that the receivers have garnered the attention of the defense, that things are going to get a little bit easier for Miami as an offense because the opponent has to defend more.
I'm going to end this segment with this. Are you ready? There are 7 teams – in the ACC that are winless in November.
Seven teams winless in November. I got you.
All right, so Wake Forest, Virginia Tech, Syracuse, Georgia Tech, Duke, Clemson, and Florida State. And that means they're winless in November because they've either had their game canceled, postponed, lost, or haven't played.
In the case all of the above, right?
Case of Georgia Tech, they have not played a game in November.
Right. I mean, think about that. Here we are. We're talking about our 2 weeks. They're lucky to get through November. I mean, and play one game.
Yeah. So that's where we are. College football, at any rate, tonight is the first college football playoff reveal. We'll see where the University of Miami sits. The Hurricanes are in the hunt for a lot of good things. And I've always said, if you win 10 games, something special is going to happen to your team. If you establish winning 10 games and you do that in consecutive seasons, then you're going to play in a big bowl game. You're going to play for a conference championship. You are playing for something. And Miami has a chance to play, to win 10 games if they get these three games in. They've got a chance to have a 10-win season. If you win 10 games, you have a great year. You're playing in something. Now, you might get edged out from the college football playoff, maybe because the voters didn't think that you were worthy of top four. But if you establish your program as a 10-win program, you have a great program.
Well, what it does is it really solidifies your recruiting, doesn't it?
Yep.
Out of everything, when you hear the term, and I think Coach Diaz is using it quite often, you want to start stacking classes on top of each other. Well, you know, you start having 10-win seasons, and you're right. You may not even go to the conference championship game. You may not be in the playoffs, but you will be you'll be in a significant bowl, and you'll be relative through the entire season. And that's really all you can ask for. And when you start getting, those top 10 recruiting classes, I don't necessarily think you have to be number one, but if you can get those top 10s 4, 5, 6 years in a row, and if you've had attrition issues, the talent level, an increased level in talent helps that. It also gives you the ability to redshirt, and you start building that roster where when you graduate a class, you don't go back to square one. Because, I'll bring it up now. You look, if Miami loses all they can lose off of this team, there's a lot of rebuilding to do next year. You know what I mean? There's a lot of numbers to replace.
Yeah, people are concentrating on the incoming freshmen, that part of the recruiting. The big part of the recruiting that has to be done is keep the guys that are here. That is the biggest part of recruiting, I think, for Coach Diaz and his staff. There are some guys on this roster that you hope will make the decision to come back next year, because if they do, they really have an opportunity, I think, to have a special season, not only what is remaining of this season, but also next year as well.
I mean, what if you had the magic wand and you could say, and it's because it is a do-over season, that we bring back every single player on this roster, and we have the infusion of the talent that we're going to sign in this class. And I know the numbers will have to get worked out down the road, but I would feel right away, without even looking at the schedule, how it's laid out. I mean, we know what the schedule is. Are you saying you're going to win 10, 11, or 12 games? I mean, it would not be out of character or beyond a stretch of imagination that would be the case if you got your quarterback back, this entire receiving quarterback, the entire backfield, plus the infusion of this recruiting class that's one of the best in the country. And it's certainly one of the best ones Miami's had in a long time.
Well, if they can finish off this season strong, they will end up in a big bowl game. And if they do, I've got the perfect way for us to get there. I have got the perfect drive. Williamson Cadillac will provide that perfect drive. Williamson Cadillac, you can experience everything they have to offer with this award-winning lineup. You can make a statement in their unmistakable XT crossovers. And if Miami's in a big bowl game, Don and I will arrive in the XT4 crossover, engineered to stand out. You can excite your senses in Williamson's CT sedan series, dedicated to performance, or ride in the original icon, the Cadillac Escalade. Visit their state-of-the-art facility, which is conveniently located at US 1 and 104th Street, just south of the Palmetto Expressway, or view their entire lineup online at WilliamsonCadillac.com. When you go to Williamson Cadillac, ask for Mr. Williamson. He'll be there. He'll talk about the Canes, but more importantly, he will make sure that you have the perfect customer experience. Williamson Cadillac, your premier luxury dealership. Williamson is Miami.
Now back to Hurricane Hotline on the home of the U, AM 560 and FM 96.5 HD2 WQAM. Driven by Williamson Cadillac. For value, style, and performance, visit Miami's premier luxury dealership. Click WilliamsonCadillac.com now. Here's Don Bailey Jr. and the voice of the Hurricanes, Joe Zagacki.
Joe Zagacki, Don Bailey Jr. We are in the college football rankings rotation now to the end of the year. We'll find out where teams are ranked, how it's going to finish up. Joining us from Stadium College Football Insider, Brett McMurphy is with us. Brett, good evening. How are you? Happy Thanksgiving.
Hey, thanks, guys. Happy Thanksgiving to you as well.
And so the debate will begin. Who do you have in your top four or five?
I actually think the same four in my on my AP ballot will be the same four for the committee. Bama 1, Notre Dame 2, Ohio State 3. And I've got Texas A&M 4. That's the one that I think is most likely to be wrong. I think 4, 5, 6 is going to be some combination of Clemson, Texas A&M, or Florida. I think the committee, though, based on how they've done this in the past, they usually value head-to-head, and Texas A&M has the win over Florida. That puts them in front of the Gators. Clemson lost to Notre Dame. That shuffles them down the pack a little bit. So I definitely think Bama is one. I definitely think Notre Dame is two. Ohio State really doesn't have a quality win to be up at three, but they kind of, you know, they'll use the old eye test, which isn't what you see, but it's what I mean, what I think and what you think. So I think those will be the top six, and then I think what will be kind of fascinating to look at a little further down is how high is Cincinnati come in the group of five if they have a legitimate chance to get into the top four. I don't think they do. And also Northwestern, how high will they be? Certainly they're probably going to have to win out to get in the top four. It would take a catastrophic number of different factors to happen for a one-loss Northwestern to finish in the top four.
Brett, when you go back and you look at this, you talk about Notre Dame. Do you think from an ACC perspective that people are realizing, even after the win over Clemson, how well-built this team is? Joe and I were talking in the last segment. I think everybody but two or three are seniors that are starters. You know, the whole group are seniors. They've got the best defense in the conference. I haven't really heard anybody talk about that the whole season. And it's just starting to dawn on me in reality that this is a team, at least statistically and also as far as age per player, is built for a championship.
Yeah, it really does. You know, and I agree with everything you've said. The flip side of that, though, however, is what has happened in the past. And we've seen Notre Dame in the college football playoff.
Yeah, you're right. That's a good point. That's a good point.
Stop me if you've heard this. And we know what has happened. So the good news for Notre Dame is they've got, you know, arguably, you could say I don't think there's any doubt. I think they have the best win of the year so far. Yes. And that's beating Clemson, even without Trevor Lawrence. And so I think they are going to get rewarded with that. And number two, despite how impressive they've been thus far, other than Clemson, they really don't have another marquee win. But there's really nobody in the country that has two marquee wins, so you can't really hold that against them. I really think it's going to boil down to the ACC title game. Well, first they got to get past North Carolina this weekend, that's not a gimme. But if they do take care of business, it's going to come down to the ACC title game. I think the winner of that game is automatic into the playoff, whether that's Clemson or Notre Dame. If Clemson's the loser, they're out. The two-loss team is not in the playoff. If Notre Dame loses, then the Irish, you know, put it in the hands of the committee, and then they're going to be judged against other one-loss teams. And if those other one-loss teams are a Power 5 conference champion, I don't think Notre Dame will get in, because then I think the committee will say, well, Notre Dame beat Clemson without their best player, and in the rematch they couldn't beat them. And then if you compare them against a one-loss Big Ten champ, one-loss SEC champ, Pac-12, I don't know, if it's an undefeated Pac-12 team, I think that's the only way the Pac-12 gets in. And then the Big 12 at this point can't have a one-loss champ. So basically Notre Dame would be compared against a one-loss SEC or Big Ten champ to get a second team in for the ACC. And I just think that's going to be very unlikely So it kind of sucks because it really means that first game didn't mean much. I think it's that rematch that the committee is going to reward as far as the college football playoff.
Locally, for us, we have the University of Miami sitting at number 10, 7-1. I don't know that they can climb up in the top four. I'm not saying that. But theoretically, they have three games remaining. They could be playing for a New Year's Six bowl game, and you and your projections have them, I believe, at the Peach Bowl.
You know, it's funny. I just did them, and I don't remember where I have them.
I have Cincinnati, BYU
in the Peach Bowl. I don't have Miami. I have Miami in the Orange Bowl.
Okay. We'll take that too. Then we don't have to travel.
Well, and that's partly one of the reasons. I mean, certainly the selection committee, as you guys know, that the teams that are not in the top four, and then they take the next highest ranked teams. So what I'm basing that on is Miami being the third highest ranked ACC team. So in my projections, I've got Clemson winning the rematch in the ACC title game, going to the college football playoff. I think Miami actually playing Notre Dame I don't have Miami in the New Year's Six. Sorry about that. Oh, I have Florida in the Orange Bowl. Here's the reason. Notre Dame, because they are an ACC member, as you guys know, the ACC gets an automatic berth into the Orange Bowl. So if Notre Dame does not make the college football playoff, and they are the highest ranked ACC team, they would go to the Orange Bowl. So I don't see Miami jumping Notre Dame. Now here's where Miami gets screwed in this deal. If Notre Dame was an independent, then Miami would get the ACC bid to the Orange Bowl and would play Notre Dame, because the opponent of the Orange Bowl, as you guys know, is either the SEC, the Big Ten, or Notre Dame. Well, now that Notre Dame's considered an ACC member, Notre Dame's on the other side of the equation as an ACC member, and that actually drops Miami out of the New Year's Six. So if you want Miami to get to a New Year's Six game, the best scenario is for Notre Dame to thump Clemson, and then hopefully Miami can jump Clemson in the final rankings, because Miami cannot be below both Clemson and Notre Dame and get to the Orange Bowl.
Oh boy, we got a lot of work to do. I'll just take a 10-1 season.
That's right.
At least we're playing football. I remember where we were this summer. No one thought we would be playing.
Well, that's a big topic, and we're playing football and grinding through it. And Don and I have seen firsthand at the University of Miami what they've done. And I actually think it's been tremendous that we're playing football. I get a little perturbed when they say the percentage of canceled postponements, but a lot of those games are being made up. So I think at the end of the year, we're going to have more football than we thought.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. And I'm a news reporter. So when games are canceled, I report them, I tweet them out. And people like to bring up hey, why don't you list the games that are being played? Well, you know, look, I hope every game gets played. But when a game is not played, you know, you have to report it. And, you know, it's the same as a coach getting fired. It's the same as a game getting postponed by a hurricane or something else. You report about it. So, yeah, I agree. We've had, I think, 80 to 85% of the games have been played. But this is a unique season. I don't know if you guys were aware or not, but the Minnesota-Wisconsin game just got canceled. And what that means is Wisconsin is ineligible for the Big Ten title game because they don't have they don't play enough games. The Big Ten had a rule. You had to play 6 of 8 games. The most Minnesota can play right now is 5 games. So basically, Wisconsin can play is 5 games. So basically, Northwestern has basically clinched a bid to the Big Ten title game, where they'll likely face Ohio State. So, yeah, there's some weird circumstances all over. And certainly the situation we talked about with the Orange Bowl, with Notre Dame being an ACC member, is basically what's going to keep Miami out of the Orange Bowl probably.
All right, so we go, you talk about news. The news this past week, at least in the ACC, was Florida State cancels the game, or I'll let you report the news, but postponed. Dabo Swinney, you know, went off on it, and it got more attention probably than any postponement has gotten, at least that we've been made aware of. What brought all the attention to that, and what do you think happens?
Well, hopefully they can play the game on December 12th. That's still a possibility. You know, it's rare that both sides are right in a situation. But in this case, I think both sides were right. Florida State obviously was right in their minds and their decision to not play the game. Because based on the protocols of the ACC, with the guidelines and different information they had, they were within their rights to postpone the game. Clemson is also right in the fact that they're upset that this game wasn't played because Clemson met all the protocols. The biggest issue is the ACC's protocols allow this to happen. You should not have a team fly to another to its opponent's town and then determine, literally 4 hours before kickoff, that's when they found out the game was postponed, that the team was coming down to breakfast at 8 a.m., noon kick. That's when they found out the game was not going to be played. So that was a screw-up by the ACC. However, with all that being said, the way Dabo has reacted to this whole thing has been a huge, huge loss on his part. I understand you address it. You fight for your team, you bring up your opinion, and that sort of thing. But this thing has gone on for 2 or 3 days now. I mean, he mentioned today, you know, he said, I'm not worried about what they say down in Tallahassee. I've been here 18 years. They've had 3 coaches in 4 years. I'm not worried about advice from down in Tallahassee.
That doesn't sound like him, though. You know what I mean? That doesn't sound like the guy that we used to know.
The aw shucks, little old Clemson. You know what it sounds like? It's Steve Spurrier. He's almost Spurrier-esque. But, yeah, it's, you know, look, it's unfortunate it happened. I understand Clemson's side of it and their right to be mad about this game not being played. I understand Florida State's side of it. They had every right to not play the game. Florida State is not backing out of the game, like Dabo has said. Florida State wants to play the game on December 12th. So we'll have to see what happens. I think in this whole thing, Florida State took the high road. Mike Norvell took the high road. Dabo Swinney took the lowest road possible. And I think everybody's kind of seeing it. And like, I agree with everything you said. You know, Dabo, what happened to the Dabo? The aw shucks were just a little Clemson. Now you're seeing kind of a different side to Dabo, and I don't think many people like it.
Well, if you look at him, though, too, if they're going to play that game on the 12th, that would mean the championship game, if they get in it, was what, the 19th? So instead of him
the following week, right.
Yeah, instead of him having possibly 2 weeks to get ready and rest his team up, he's going to be, you know, having to go back-to-back again.
Right. That's obviously, you know, that would be an issue there. And then, you know, Notre Dame, it appears, you know, but then again, Notre Dame does not have an open week. They're playing at Wake Forest. So neither team would have an open day before the game. So, you know, maybe he's looking further down the road thinking, well, we would have had an open date. We would have had the advantage of rest. Now there's no advantage there. But yeah, either way, I mean, you know, come on. It's everyone knows the situation we're in now. And for him to just continue to rail on Florida State, I mean, this should have been a one-day story. And here we are 3 days later, and we're still talking about it, and it's not going anywhere either.
All right, Brett, you've been gracious with your time. Thank you for joining us tonight. We're hoping that everybody gets to the finish line one way or the other this year. It's been a tough sledding, but I think it's been a great story that there has been college football, and hopefully we can get to the finish line and have some great moments in January. Thank you for being with us here tonight.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
That's Stadium College Football Insider Brett McMurphy. Join us. When we come back, we'll move our attention to the University of Miami, and we'll talk about the Canes offensive line with offensive line coach Garen Justice coming up next.
Hurricane Hotline on the home of the U. AM 560 and FM 96.5 HD2 WQAM. Driven by Williamson Cadillac. For value, style, and performance, visit Miami's premier luxury dealership. Click WilliamsonCadillac.com now. Here's Don Bailey Jr. and the voice of the Hurricanes, Joe Zagacki.
Rolling right along. Joe Zagacki, Don Bailey Jr. joining us now, University of Miami offensive line coach Garen Justice. Coach, thank you for being with us. Happy Thanksgiving. How are you doing tonight?
Doing well. Thank you guys for having me on the show.
So we have a two-week pause here. How do you think, or do you think it slows down your momentum in any way? It's one of the things Don and I were talking about. You're developing some identity, personality, really just starting to peak. So how do you get that back when you're allowed to come back?
You know, I think it's all how you look at it. I mean, I think you look at one side and say, man, you're probably going to lose a lot of momentum and things like that. But the other side of it, you're looking at it and saying, well, yeah, that's unfortunate we're going through this, but it happens to fall right where guys have to finish up their projects. They're probably stressed out about school, doing that, those type things. Also, you're 2-3 months into the season, and some bodies may be able to heal up. Some guys that weren't 100% may be able to come back. And now you're also getting kind of a flash of, hey, football can easily be taken away from you again. So hopefully when the guys come back, they'll have that hunger, that energy. And we're just trying to spin this thing as a positive way and hopefully allow us to finish out strong in December.
Coach, first of all, thank you very much for being with us. And big picture again, when you look at being 7-1 and that you got 8 football games in, that's a pretty darn big accomplishment as it is.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, I know there are times that even in July that we didn't even know if we were going to have a season. And it was back and forth the whole time. And, again, we get selfish and we want more and we want to play more. But also there have been some really, really grim outlooks when you look back before the season started. And if you said, hey, you'd be 7-1 and you play 8 games, you'd feel pretty good about it from the fact that it could have easily been taken away at any time.
Coach, Don and I were talking about the last game. You go in with a limited amount of offensive linemen. You run about 80-some plays. I don't know if anybody subbed in or subbed out. I'm not sure. But I do think it was a performance where your guys really did grind it out. What were your thoughts on the way your guys were able to make it through that game, and how proud were you?
Yeah, I mean the performance wasn't the best, so I guess the best term you could use is grind it out, because we did find a way to get a win. We played well enough to get a win. But I think the week you go on in a week and guys don't know if they're going to play that week. Guys are unsure what's happening. They're unsure what the lineup's going to be. We have Usman who comes off of 2 weeks of isolation from having COVID. And I mean, for moments like that, you're pretty happy. You're pretty satisfied with what we're made of. You know, we still got to be a lot better, and we still can't make excuses. But the fact that the guys still found a way to hop on a plane and perform well enough to win, you're still very, very happy with what we're doing.
Coach, how's the big man doing, 55, Devon Donaldson? I enjoy watching him play. I'm looking forward to the day he can get back out there and help us.
Yeah, I mean, Vaughn's he's a guy that we've tried to really take care of as far as bringing him back slowly with his rehab, just for the fact that he is a bigger man. And that being a major joint in his body that carries half of his weight, we've got to be really, really careful with how we go about that. So we've been taking our time with our progress with that, and Vaughn's been doing well. And he actually got the green light to go for Virginia Tech game. And we going into the game, though, we really didn't want to use him unless it was an emergency, because we still don't feel great where he's at as far as his conditioning and being ready to roll. But Vaughn was ready. Vaughn was excited, and hopefully we can get to mix him in more here in the next couple of weeks.
I watched him in pregame warm up a little bit at center. The ball looks like a raisin in his hand.
No, he is a is a giant man. There's not many people that I go around that I feel small around, and Navon's one of those.
How are your two guys? You had two guys that played a lot last year. They're still young guys. They battle pretty hard. Ja'Kai wasn't eligible to go in the last game because of circumstances, but Zion and Ja'Kai, two really bright kids, both not from South Florida, come into this program, played a lot of football. Where are they in their progress?
Yeah, I'm really, really pleased with both those guys. I mean, and the same reason they found a way to step in and be part of the starting lineup last year is the same reason they have this year. I mean, they're reliable, do-right kids who do their best to do what you're trying to coach them to do. And plus they have ability and talent to go with that. So they're good young players. I mean, we sometimes forget that they're true sophomores. And for an offensive lineman, that's rare that guys can walk in the door and help out and be a significant part of what you're doing. But their growth, I think, has been a lot better this year just for the fact that the game's finally starting to slow down for them being their second year playing college football. But can't say enough nice things about those guys. Really like where they're at. And they've been really two of our more consistent guys this season.
Coach, you know, I don't want to leave out Jared Williams, and I feel that almost a lot of people that are Miami fans or South Florida that follow this team, they really don't know enough about him. He's at the right tackle. He transferred from Houston. But he has been he was a breath of fresh air for that offensive line. And aside from that, I guess he had the game where he was injured, where he didn't start. Other than that, he's brought a lot of consistency to that right tackle spot.
Yeah, he really has. And Jared's a quiet kid who just has walked in the room and the guys have accepted him with open arms. And he's been steady since day one. I mean, he's shown a slight progression. Now, he had a little finger deal at Clemson, which is setting back some. That's kind of why we held him out with Pitt, because just he wasn't ready with how they were configuring his finger or whatever for the game. And but he's been a day in, day out worker. He's done all the right things. Has a great attitude. Is great for the room. And really, he's a guy you look back on and you say, man, I'm glad we picked him up, because like the Virginia Tech game, for example, you can't play that game if a guy like Jared Williams is not available. And Jared's been there week in and week out and ready to go for us.
Coach, what's it like between yourself, Coach Lashley, Coach Likens? All of you guys share, I think, similar philosophies. You've all been coordinators. What's that creative process like each week?
Yeah, well, it's nice having other guys in the room that, I mean, everyone's pulling their weight as far as bringing ideas. And I think it allows Coach Lashley to not feel like the burden's on him to have to bring every idea offensively to the table. So, and Rhett does an unbelievable job as far as managing that and making sure that we get the best game plan to help us win. But it's nice just when you're talking in a room of, like, it's one thing to suggest a call, or it's one thing to do that, but just like anything, unless you've had to actually call it or you've been in that seat. And so a lot of times, for example, I may say, man, this would be really good, but it's going to be hard to get those reps in. It's going to be hard to get that called for Saturday. Or, hey, I know this may be a good idea, but this is not who we are, and it's not what, you know, I mean, just I think sometimes when you've never called it, it's hard to lose this or get out of the scope of what the offense coordinator wants. So I think that's been a big help for Rhett. And it's been a big help for me just seeing the way a really good offense coordinator like Rhett does it. And it's been a good experience all around.
Coach, I don't know that all of our fans or our listeners realize this, but you were a head coach at a very, very young age. And how did that benefit you today? When you look back at that experience, and I think you told me that you were the head coach, but also watched the weight room when you had that job, right? Or you oversaw some of that?
Yeah, when you're in Division II, you wear a lot of hats. It's not a whole lot different in high school in a lot of ways. The only difference is we're allowed to give scholarship money. And, you know, when I first got the job, I was 28 years old, was 4 years removed from being a GA, or 2 years removed from being a GA, 4 years removed from playing. So it came really, really quick. It happened really, really quick as far as that course. But yeah, it's a thing that's been really, really cool. It's made me appreciate the equipment managers. It made me appreciate the strength staff. It's made me appreciate those different positions. And also, it's allowed me to be a much better assistant, because now I try to keep things off of Coach Diaz's desk, because as a head coach, the last thing you want to worry about is something small and minor that an assistant can take care of. And I think a good assistant's the type of guy that tries to do his best to minimize the work of the head coach, and you need to assist the head coach and help him do his job. So I think that's the biggest thing. And then also understanding just how the whole team works together. It's like, hey, this may be great for the offense, or this may be great for the offensive line, but this may not benefit the defense. This may not benefit a position room on the defensive line. And I think once you've been in charge of a team, it's easier for you to see the big picture.
Coach, how is the recruiting trail for you? I guess it's not really much of a trail. It's more of a recruiting Zoom, I suppose.
Yeah, it's such a different ballgame right now. Everything's social media, phone calls, that. I mean, they've got us grounded as far as not being allowed to go out and see coaches and watch kids practice and do those type of things. And that's something as a coach that you kind of like, because now you don't have to travel as much, but at the same time you miss, because you miss those interactions and you miss really getting to see your eyes on potential recruits. So it's going to be a really tricky year for everyone involved in college football as far as really identifying players off of film, seeing what they can do from there, and trying to get a great feel of who they are as people just through phone calls.
Coach, I can't go through a conversation with you without asking about how my man Corey Gaynor's doing, our center. Is he how's he progressed this season, and how's he adapted to this offense?
You know, I think Corey, just from what I can gather from the past, is Corey's been a guy who's always tried to lead. He's always tried to get the other guys going along, and has done a pretty good job with the leadership role. And I don't know if the guys in the past have ever really let him do that to the full ability. And I think really a credit to the other guys is they've let Corey lead this year. And Corey's, I mean, week in, week out, Corey's probably been one of our most consistent guys. He's kind of the heartbeat of the room. He's the guy that's probably the most balled in the room. I mean, not to say the other guys are not, but he is the alpha of the room. I mean, he's the one that everyone looks up to, and he makes my job easier as a coach. And I'm glad we have Corey. He's just a steady, reliable guy that you can count on week in, week out to be there, and he keeps getting better every week.
All right, before we let you go, what do we got planned for Thanksgiving? Do we have a big bird on the table? What do you have planned for Thanksgiving?
Nothing crazy. Pretty standard, just my wife and my daughter. So it's just us three. Okay. So we'll have a small turkey and just the traditional stuff, traditional size, dressing, mashed potatoes, corn, stuffing, nothing crazy. But it's nice to the good thing about this is now you're able to, I mean, you take a seat, you take a step back, and everything's on pause, and you get frustrated with it. But at the same time, you look at it and it's like, hey, when during Thanksgiving week do I get to spend time with my family? And
right.
We're getting there now. So you kind of got to look for those tiny little blessings, everything you do. And it's been great for us to be able to spend more time together.
All right, Coach. Thank you for being with us. Happy Thanksgiving. Have a great day.
Yeah, happy Thanksgiving to you guys as well.
All right. Talk to you soon, Coach.
All right. We'll see you.
All right, that's offensive line coach Garen Justice joining us. Okay, when we come back, Don, we're going to talk a little basketball. We'll move our attention to Jim Larrañaga, then Katie Meyer, and then you and I will talk a little bit about the college football playoff, which is being revealed here in the next couple of moments.
I will look forward to it.
All right, so we'll continue right after this.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
For a
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly Auto Parts.